Blog Talk Radio.
BangTheBook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, February 22nd edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 5 hour and 10 minutes or so as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for this Thursday edition of the show. Two professional handicappers will join me. The first, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. The second, Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Plenty of college basketball chatter coming your way on today's show with Brad. We'll talk about some overrated and underrated teams. Also take a look at the futures market and the teams that he has projected as the most likely to win the NCAA tournament. Then he'll also have a couple of best bets for us here for tonight's card. Then with Rolf Michaels in the second half of today's show, we'll chat with him about teams that are playing each other for the second time and some of the betting angles that you can find with that. We'll talk about some senior night betting angles as well. He'll have a best bet for Thursday night and Saturday. And we'll have a bunch of stuff along the way as well. Over at bangthebook.com, lots of great stuff going on. Make sure you check out my MLB season win totals, which I will actually get posted here today for the American League East, going through the editing process yesterday with some of the new transactions and all that type of stuff. You know, just kind of the day caught up with me a little bit, so I didn't get those posted. Again, I am posting them about a week in advance of when I posted them last year. So, you know, still some extra lead time for those, even if I don't get to them until today or tomorrow. But I did put up my primer piece, which introduces the series. Also, some important statistics for handicapping baseball. So both of those are up on the front page over at bangthebook.com. And, of course, on our MLB page as well. But we're not forgetting about the other sports. We've got tons of college basketball, NBA, NHL, golf, NASCAR, UFC, you name it. We got it over at bangthebook.com, where we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Check out our free pick contests, free pick videos, sportsbook reviews, that DSI sportsbook promo code BTB and the number 25. Still active for our listeners that want to sign up over there. And I will get rid of that annoying Blog Talk Radio jingle that, for some inexplicable reason, played here at the top of today's show. Two guests coming your way on today's program. The first, Mr. Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, man?
It's going well. Good to hear your voice on this fine Thursday morning.
Well, we got plenty of things to talk about here, but, you know, one of the things that we like to do in your segments is just sort of break the mold a little bit. You know, right now it's all NBA and NHL for the most part. I'll start transitioning into some more Major League Baseball stuff once we get into the month of March. But we like to break up the hardwood conversation a little bit by talking some college football here, and you're the perfect guy to do it. You're doing college football year-round. You're always looking around for new bits of information, some of the new finds that you've got. Anything that you've picked up on here over the last 7 days since we last talked?
Well, I made another futures bet, and I know futures for the most part are for squares, but I look to make some hedging opportunities later in the season. A lot of times I look for teams that can at least make it to the conference championship game and then look to maybe do some hedging. And, you know, one team that I've been waiting just for my opportunity at the right price to jump, and there's huge differences in the futures markets. Let's put that out there. Very, very, very wise to shop around, because it can be a team 20-1 at one place and just down the street 40-1. So make sure you shop around for the best value bets with futures. But the bet that I just made the other day was on Arizona. And I know you're going to say, hey, wait, I thought you said you're talking football, not basketball. Yeah, I am talking football here. And I know perfectly well Arizona's not going to win the national championship this year, and I got them 150-1. But what I do think, and what I do think they can win, is at least the Pac-12 South, especially when you start looking at the team coming back with 17 returning starters. Weren't that far off last year, definitely tallied off the last four or five games. New coach Kevin Sumlin, which I love that hire, to be honest with you. I think it's actually an upgrade over, you know, Rich Rod got a little bit stale in the last couple of years there. But you got one of the best quarterbacks in the entire country, Khalil Tate, who's a good fit for the Kevin Sumlin offense. You got Kevin Sumlin, who traditionally starts off pretty strong in the season. Then you look at Arizona's schedule. Not only is this an experienced team, but they don't play the two best teams out of the Pac-12 North in Washington and Stanford. They get the other best team in the Pac-12 South, USC, at home. I don't have Arizona more than a touchdown underdog in any game this upcoming season. I think they got a possibility of being favored in 8 or 9, and I think, again, with USC down in my expectation, UCLA with a new head coach, I think there's opportunity there for them to make a run in the Pac-12 South. And if they just make the Pac-12 championship game, which they have done so in the last 3-4 years and made a Fiesta Bowl, I think, in the 2014 season, then obviously I can start hedging back that 150-1 ticket. So didn't make a full bet, a full unit bet on the future, and don't have to, obviously, with a 150-1 ticket. But I put a half unit on Arizona to win the national championship.
Yeah, and this is such an important discussion, an important conversation to have, especially as we talk about some college basketball futures here on today's segment as well, is that, again, the primary goal with every futures bet is to make profit. You know, if Arizona wins the national championship, it's phenomenal for you with that 150-1. Like you said, they're probably not going to do it. But as long as they put themselves in a position to get into that Pac-12 championship game, you can start hedging against that 150-1, and you would like to think that, you know, whoever the Pac-12 champion is would be strong enough this year to get into the college football playoff. Now, we don't know if that's going to be the case, obviously, but still, the fact remains that you're sitting there with a 150-1 ticket and you're just looking to guarantee profit. And if that means hedging against Arizona in the Pac-12 championship game against whoever they're playing, you know, that's one way to do it. If maybe you find a game or two throughout the season where Arizona's, you know, in a certain situation where you can look to play against the other side, you'll have the opportunity to do that as well. And that's what 150-1 does for you. It gives you a lot of leeway to start cutting into that potential profit. And I think it's a really smart bet.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I plan on doing with that particular ticket. And then, I mean, there's other opportunities. I mean, you could sell future tickets now at a place called like a prop swap. That's an entirely new market that's come to fruition here in recent years. And again, I'll say this, you know, and a lot of people, I'm going to post that ticket on Twitter today and get a lot of, you know, hey, you just wasted $50. But, I mean, let's be honest, $50 is, you know, a dinner out with your significant other. I mean, I just think I'm looking to make it, some money off of $50. So I get it. Arizona's not going to win the national championship, but I think I can at least well position myself later in the year to make some money off that ticket. I don't need obviously to make the full 150-1 amount, but heck, if I make 10-1 off of that, you know, I make $500 off a $50 investment. I think that's a pretty good, wise investment. And I know a lot of people out there in the world that, you know, spend $50 on a video poker within a matter of, you know, 20 to 30 minutes. So that's why I put that out there. And again, we'll be talking more futures with the college hardwood here in a little bit.
Well, that's the thing, too. I mean, I was talking with Kyle Hunter on the segment that we've got coming up on Friday, and we were talking a little bit at the tail end of the segment about our diversified futures portfolios for college basketball. You know, I've got $5 on Middle Tennessee State at 500-1 to win the NCAA tournament. They're not winning the NCAA tournament, but it is a $5 investment. When I go get lunch after the show or have it delivered to me, it's going to cost me more than $5. I can guarantee you that. So you make this small investment, and if you lose it, you lose it. You know, shit happens. It's still gambling. It is what it is. But, you know, again, for my $5 investment, if Middle Tennessee State makes the NCAA tournament, and they clearly should, they may be an at-large team. They certainly should win Conference USA if they get into that position. I have $5 out there. I've got, you know, a significantly higher amount in potential profit. It is easy to start hedging back. If I make a $100 bet against Middle Tennessee State, I made money. And that's all that matters. I'm investing $5 to make money. You're investing $50 to make money. And I think that's one of the disconnects here with people not understanding futures is that, you know, they think you're wasting $50. And look, if you were just betting straight on Arizona to win the national championship and putting $50 on it and not guaranteeing profit somewhere along the line, then yeah, you are wasting it, but it's an investment opportunity to where you know that it's $50 to win. It may be 500. It's probably not going to be the 150-1 payout, but still, $50 to win 500 is something that any of us would do any single day.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better myself. And I'm also intrigued, and you and I have been texting and DMing back and forth. I think you have a very, very strong portfolio when it comes to winning the NCAA tournament here in about 6 weeks. I think you're going to have a pretty good payoff. Definitely hedging some bets there. Tip of the cap to you. Middle Tennessee not only won one of your many strong bets, in my opinion.
And this is one of the things, you know, I had some listeners kind of ask me for the Monday Mailbag segment why I don't talk about, you know, the individual plays that I make on single games and stuff like that. And like I've told them, you know, I'm a professional radio show host and writer. I'm not a professional handicapper. I'm not someone that, you know, really does what you do, and you've got clients and you've got people to answer to and things of that sort. I just try to help people in certain directions or give them the tools that they need. And, you know, it's even a little bit uncomfortable for me to talk about some of the futures prices that I'm getting, but it's such a good illustration of what you can do with the futures market if you're paying attention. I'll talk about that again here once we get to some of those teams that you have with the highest likelihood of winning. But let's transition over to the college basketball side of things here. And I know there's an overrated and an underrated couple of teams that you want to talk about. Let's start with the overrated team, and it's certainly pretty relevant to what happened last night.
Yeah, Clemson again dropped another game and obviously didn't cover the spread on the road against Virginia Tech. And I identified Clemson right when they lost Dante Grantham, one of their best players. But it was several games back, and I didn't see a power ratings adjustment, at least out there in the marketplace, too big of an adjustment on it because, you know, Clemson continued to win. Kudos to them. They did beat North Carolina during a stretch, but they really benefited from playing some of the weak ACC teams right when he went out, Pittsburgh, Wake Forest, Georgia Tech, depleted Notre Dame, and it kind of covered up the loss. Now, what happened was not only did they lose Dante Grantham, but in the last couple of games they've been playing without another starter in Mitchell. And this is a team that got, you know, hot at the start of the season, started off 14-1, but really been 500 since. They're 6-6, and I'd argue if they didn't benefit from playing all those very weak teams in the ACC, at least at that point in their schedule, this very well could be a 4-8, 3-9 type of team in their last 12 games. And when they've stepped up and played the Dukes and the Virginias and to the lesser extent the Florida States here recently and the Virginia Techs, not been a good look for a team currently. And the committee, now obviously 10 days ago, gave them a lot of publicity, making them a top 4 seed, and they're currently in top 15 in the AP poll. Now, I'm not buying it. Clemson, when my power ratings come out tomorrow, won't even be in my top 25.
Yeah, when you look at Clemson right now, per Joe Lunardi and his bracketology projections, they'd be a 5 seed in the East, but, you know, they run into a situation here with the rest of their schedule. They play Florida State at home, and they just lost to Florida State on the road, only by a bucket, maybe a little bit of a revenge spot for them. That's still going to be a tough game. Syracuse, not a great team this year, but, you know, playing against that zone is always a little bit tricky for teams, especially if you're missing, you know, a couple of your primary scorers. And then you get to the ACC Conference Tournament, and you know, will they be a one-and-done type of team in that format against some teams that, you know, maybe have a little bit more to play for? Because Clemson right now tied for fourth in the ACC Conference standings. They're solidly in the tournament. They may run into a bubble team or somebody that, you know, has a little bit more motivation. So, you know, they're in the tournament, but, you know, they're probably one of those one-and-done types of teams in March Madness at this point, I would say.
Yeah, and there's that type of team when you say, you know, they're sitting as a 5 seed, and we'll go to Joe Lunardi's bracket. Loyola Chicago in that 12 seed spot, I can tell you right now in that matchup I'd have Loyola Chicago plus the points, pretty good defensive team, a slow pace there. Yeah, they're that type of team that's going to probably get a 5 or a 6 seed somewhere in there, and I'll be looking to play against, you know, a shorthanded Clemson team.
All right, so how about a team that's underrated then, as we'll sort of look with more of a glass half full approach?
Well, I think the Vegas markets are on to it, but I don't think that the national public, as far as the publicity and certainly not the AP poll when you look at West Virginia. And here's a team that, you know, just this past Saturday had a very disappointing performance because, you know, once again, third time in a row that they played Kansas, they led by double digits, you know, against them in the second half and somehow blew the game. And obviously the news that got out there, the free throw disparity in that game, 35-2. I mean, it's 35-2 and you're still playing Kansas on the road and you still have a chance to win the game in the final minutes. I mean, that shows you the strength of them, but I think they're getting overlooked. I mean, there is a West Virginia team that had that 14 or 15 game winning streak in the middle portion of the season, their longest streak since Jerry West was playing for them back in the late 50s, early 60s. I think we're still buying them low. They're 5-7, the Mountaineers. And you also look at the fact that they rebounded immediately from the Kansas game, went on the road, stay on the road, and beat a red-hot Baylor team and really took it to them. They were favored on the road against a red-hot Baylor team. We're only getting 3 against Kansas on the road. That means on a neutral floor, West Virginia probably be about a 1-point favorite, maybe a 2-point favorite. And yet, they're not even the top 20 in the AP poll. I mean, here's a borderline top 10 team, in my opinion. You got a unique defense. top 20 offense, Hall of Fame coach. And I think they got a little bit of an axe to grind after that Kansas game. I'm buying West Virginia. I think we see a very motivated West Virginia moving forward.
I'm really interested in West Virginia because, you know, this is a team right now. You can get them at 40-1 at Five Dimes, 33-1 at BetOnline. Again, you always want to shop around for the best prices. Part of me wants to kind of dive in a little bit with this team. And they have made it to the Sweet 16 two of the last 3 years. And as you mentioned, they play this unique style of defense. And once they're not playing Big 12 opponents anymore, you know, how do teams fare against that press Virginia style once we get into the NCAA tournament? If they run into a matchup where they're playing a couple of teams that don't have great guard play, and there certainly are some of those that are in the field right now, West Virginia should walk to the Sweet 16. Now, if they're a 4 seed, they're going to wind up playing a number 1 seed in that Sweet 16 matchup. But still, at that point, you know, 40-1 is kind of on the fringes of being able to start hedging a little bit. So I think what my hope is with West Virginia here is that, you know, they'll beat Iowa State coming up here on Saturday. My hope is that they lose to Texas Tech next week, maybe lose that finale to Texas, get knocked out early in the Big 12 Conference tournament. Then maybe at that point I'll look to grab them at a futures price, because I think in the first two rounds, they've got a decent chance of running into teams that just aren't comfortable playing against that press Virginia defense.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, as far as the futures markets go, I'd wait till the NCAA tournament is announced and just look at their bracket. And that's the type of team, if they got a favorable bracket, then absolutely I think they're worth an investment. You're right. I mean, this is a team that probably a 4 or 5 seed right now, but with their upcoming schedule, they could play themselves down to maybe even a 7 seed. But, you know, as far as my investment, I'll be looking to play on them on a game-by-game basis, and, you know, never playing blindly, and I'll look at situations and lines, obviously, to see if there's market value on West Virginia. But as far as the futures, I'm going to wait until I see what their pathway is to the, you know, in the NCAA tournament. And like you said, if they got a couple of mismatches where, you know, they're going to be facing teams that aren't really strong at the guard position, then I'm definitely – or teams that can throw over the top and have some length that you can throw to midcourt and get above that press. If they're not facing that in the first couple of games, then absolutely I think they're worth an investment at that point.
All right, as we continue to look at a couple of teams here that we touched on last week, Oklahoma and Nebraska. You know, the story keeps getting more and more interesting for these two particular teams. Let's stay in the Big 12, though, here and talk about the Sooners, who, let's be honest here, Brad, they're kind of in free fall mode right now.
To say that you think? I mean, to say the least, I mean, last 12 games are 1-11 against the spread, and yet on a game-by-game basis, more often than not, they're still getting money in the marketplace. Why? Because they have Trae Young. I mean, the first guy that could lead the country in points per game and assists per game as far as the nation since they started tracking assists in the early 80s. And yet he's the lead story a lot of times when you go to ESPN or you're watching. And I just don't get it, because not only are they 1-11 against the spread their last 12 games, but, hell, let's just talk straight up, 2-9 last 11 games. That doesn't sound like a tournament team. And I thought there was corruption. NCAA committee had them as a 4 seed in the reveal. I thought that was 3 or 4 slots too high at that point 10 days ago. And just now, until Lunardi just put his updated bracket, I mean, even on the 19th, he still had Oklahoma as the number 6 seed. I think they're trying their absolute hardest to get Trae Young, a marquee name, into the NCAA tournament. I think at best, it's a borderline bubble team at this point. And I still think, even though a team, more often than not, if a team is 1-11 against the spread, I mean, you're paying a premium, fading them. But with Oklahoma and Trae Young, people continue to bet on them. So I still think moving forward, you can maybe make money fading Oklahoma, even though they're on a 1-11 against the spread run.
Yeah, and this is one of the things I talk about a lot when it comes to the college football playoff, is that, you know, this thing is never about the student athletes. It never has been. It never will be. It's about dollar signs. And getting Trae Young in the NCAA tournament creates dollar signs. I mean, this is a kid that's got significant buzz, deservedly so. You know, I know that Oklahoma's kind of falling off the face of the earth here a little bit, but Trae Young is a freshman. He's one of the highest usage players in the country, has to do virtually everything for this team offensively, and he's just gassed. And I know that you've got a good statistic about that that we can touch on here in a second, but, you know, they need to get him into the tournament if there's any way that they can do it. The problem is, this game against Kansas State this weekend is not a gimme because Kansas State's got everything to play for as well. Road trip to Baylor. Baylor's a team where Scott Drew, you know, oftentimes has a lot of talent, but they seem to wait until February and March to actually start to put it together and, you know, look like a pretty good team. They've had some good runs in the Big 12 Conference Tournament before. And then Iowa State, a game that should get them a little bit healthy heading into the Big 12 Conference Tournament. But here's the catch-22 with Oklahoma. You know, sometimes when you've got these really young teams, and we've seen this before where Duke, you know, is one of those teams that doesn't tend to have a ton of success in the ACC Conference Tournament. Sometimes we've seen other teams kind of bow out early as well. It's a blessing in disguise because they're freshman heavy. They get time off. For Oklahoma, if they lose in the first round of the Big 12 champion, their Big 12 Conference Tournament, that's great for them because Trae Young can sit around. The problem is they're not a lock to make the field now, so it's not as great for them as it was maybe 3 weeks ago.
No, not at all. They're going to have to win a couple games, I think, although we'll see how they do down the stretch here. But it's not a gimme now at this point, finally, that they're going to make the tournament. And I get it, dollar signs is probably better for the NCAA tournament. But I also think it's probably better for my pocketbook if I can get an opportunity to continue to fade them. And I think that that'll be a situation there. If they do still make the NCAA tournament, everyone's going to be talking about them. And I think you're going to be paying a premium on Oklahoma in that particular game in a first-round game or a first-four type of a game. But, again, he's out of gas. And where do you look at that? Well, let's look at it, some of his long-range shooting. When you don't have legs, it's tough to make the outside shot. And, you know, he was respectful from three-point range most of the season. Last six games, 11 out of 56 from three-point range. I'm pretty sure Adam Burke can do better than that, 11 out of 56, maybe even with a hand in his face.
There's no way in hell I could do better. At this point, dude, it's been so long since I've shot a basketball, I might go 11 of 56 from the free throw line. It's been a long time.
Fair enough. I was just trying to prop you up there, but you didn't take and run with it. I get it. But I can tell you this, old Brad Powers could do 11 out of 56 in his sleep still. He still got some basketball skill left in him.
Oh, yeah? In his sleep. All right, so basically what you're telling me here is that I need to come out to Vegas. We need to just take over a gym. We need to commandeer a gym somewhere. And then I going to pump you full of Ambien?
Well, okay, not in my sleep, but we'll take it one step down from that. With my eyes closed, from the three-point range, 11 out of 56, over-under. I'll take that bet with you. We can have a nice bet on that.
Oh, man. Dude, you got to juice the under if you're going to close your eyes. I don't know if you can do it with your eyes open. Hand in your face or no?
All right, fair enough. No, that's fine. Yeah, what are you going to give me? 3-1, 5-1?
We'll talk about it off air, and we'll tell our listeners what our actual bet is here next week. It'll be our own kind of, March Madness type of action, something like that. All right, let's talk about the Nebraska Cornhuskers and a team that we also talked about on last week's show. And, you know, what a story that this team currently is right now.
Yeah, I mean, why do we talk about it still? Because a lot of it's still in play. And here's a team, yeah, they didn't cover against Illinois, kind of broke the streak there a little bit, but the reality is this team, since the turn of the calendar, 17-0 against the spread against any team not named Illinois. They're 0-2 against the Fighting Illini. I think they had trouble with the Illinois length, out-rebounded by 26 in those two games. They just the other night after the Illinois get lost on Sunday, you know, bounced right back, won and covered at home against a pretty red-hot Indiana team, and they're playing another relatively hot Penn State team hosting them at the end of the season. I mean, keep in mind, Nebraska's only lost one home game, and it was by a single point to Kansas. So they've been really good, and let's face it, Nebraska's firmly on the bubble. It's a team that the only Power 5 conference team never to win an NCAA tournament game. So I think they're very motivated. The loss to Illinois hurt their chances a little bit, but I got to think if they can get one more win against Penn State and, what, get to 12 or 13 wins in the Big Ten, I don't know how you can leave them out of the NCAA tournament, but, boy, the market. And here's another thing that happens each and every game. The bigger money is against Nebraska. And a big reason why they've still been able to cover this and been on this run, 17-2, their last 19 games, every single game the market comes in against them. So if they open Nebraska a four-point favorite, that more often than not it's going to close with them favored by 2.5 or 3. So look for that. It'll be an interesting line move. with the Penn State game this upcoming weekend. And Penn State's a team that obviously lost at home in a big game against Michigan last night. But Penn State took heavy money in the marketplace last night against Michigan. So I'll be looking later in the game leading up to the tip time, probably catching some value with Nebraska in their next game.
Yeah, that's a game that we did talk about. I recorded last night with Kyle Hunter for our Friday edition of the show. We did talk about that one a little bit at the tail end of the program. So you'll get some, you got some good thoughts there from Brad. You'll also get some thoughts tomorrow on the show as well about that game. And it's a huge game because for Penn State here, I mean, this is a team with a lot of helium right now. Lenardi's got them as one of his first four out. If they win that game against Nebraska, you know, I mean, I don't know how much they'll get propped up for that one. Hopefully it's enough to put them, you know, at least into one of the play-in games, because this is a team that's knocked off Ohio State twice, a team that's played very, very well in this conference. I know the Big Ten is a little bit watered down here this year, but since you've got Penn State playing well, that team up north is playing very well right now also. Nebraska's on this great run. All of a sudden, this is a conference that, you know, people kind of threw a cold blanket on or a wet blanket on it early in the year. It's gotten to be a pretty strong conference overall now.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, Michigan, like you mentioned, I think is one of the more underrated teams in the entire betting marketplace. I think last 19 games, 15-4 straight up, and I believe like 14-5 against the spread since they lost that first game to your beloved Ohio State Buckeyes. I mean, they've been rolling. And keep in mind that mixed in there is like a controversial one-point loss to Purdue at home, a four-point loss to Purdue on the road. They beat Michigan State on the road. Yeah, I think the Big Ten all of a sudden is a lot stronger and not so top-heavy. I mean, it's been Michigan State, Purdue, and Ohio State at the top, all, it seems like, all year. But, man, some of these other teams are really closing pretty strong. And it'll be interesting to see how these teams get matched up in the NCAA tournament, because I think right now I'll be looking to buy the Big Ten. But right now Lunardi's only got four teams in, so we'll see. I think the Big Ten gets five or six, in my opinion.
Well, and for the Wolverine fans that are listening to the show here, I will grant you that the block was probably good, but the spot was good as well. So I just don't want you to forget that. All right, Brad, I know that you've got a list here of the top seven teams you think are most likely to win the national championship, along with their current futures odds out there in the marketplace. I think this is a really important exercise to talk about right now, because you know, we just had that discussion at the top of the segment about futures and why it's important to grab some of those bigger prices out there that have some of the bigger values. When you're starting to play some of these types of teams that are on this list, you really don't have any hedging margin until maybe the final four with somebody like a Villanova at 4-1. You really can't do anything too extensive with them prior to that point, unless you're going to invest, you know, multiple units and have yourself, you know, like 3X to win 12X, something like that. Maybe you've got a little bit more room there with that. But you know, ultimately, these are teams, for the most part, that you need to really get to that Final Four or even the national championship game.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's start with Villanova. I think Villanova is the favorite, especially you saw them get Phil Booth back last night. They dominated DePaul, and I thought the key win being Xavier. Getting that win without Phil Booth, finally giving them a little bit of momentum after they had a rough patch there, losing the St. John's and also losing the Providence. I think they had their rough patch, and I think it's a buy team, but not necessarily buy team as far as the current odds, because they're priced accordingly, 4-1 Villanova. I think Duke, we continue to see them thrive. I mean, they want to cover three straight games without Marvin Bagley, Grayson Allen running the point. I think Duke has the most upside of any team in the entire tournament. They're young, they're inexperienced outside of Grayson Allen, but man, do they have a lot of upside. Duke, to me, right behind Villanova as a favorite. Virginia, there might be a ceiling on Virginia, especially on the offensive end. Here's a team that's never made the Final Four, but there's no question about it. They've been a top 2-3 team all season long. The win in Cameron, you know, 3-4 weeks ago, I think pretty much cemented that status. They had a hiccup against Virginia Tech, but it was just a bad shooting night for the Cavaliers. 6-1, I think they're appropriately priced. And then I think you get a value bet. I know it's very tough to defend the national championship. I think only two teams have done it since John Wooden's UCLA teams in the 60s and 70s. Yeah, obviously, you had the Christian Leitner, Bobby Hurley, Duke teams in the early 90s, and then you had Noah's Florida team with Billy Donovan there in the mid-2000s. But right now, I'm telling you, North Carolina is playing at a top-five level. I think they've won now six straight after a key win in a tough spot last night in the Carrier Dome. Tar Heels, I thought, had one of the most impressive five-day stretches of any team in the country this year. They beat Duke. They have a revenge spot on the road against NC State. They beat Notre Dame. Those three wins in 5 days, remarkable. 20-1. Now, I mean, if you're looking for a blue blood team that's going to probably be a 2 or 3 seed unless they continue to win, then they can maybe get to the borderline 1 seed level there. Boy, 20-1 Tar Heels, I think, are a nice value bet, especially I think that they're going to make the Sweet 16 at the very least. And that's when you can start maybe with a 20-1 ticket, maybe hedging at the Sweet 16 Elite 8 round. And then behind that, Michigan State, but they're priced, you know, 7-2, no value. Kansas, 18-1. I think there might be a nice spot for Kansas because I think the Jayhawks can play themselves. They beat Texas Tech over the weekend, win the Big 12 yet again. I mean, Lunardi's got them right now as the number one seed. So you're telling me a number one seed at 18-1? That's not a bad investment there. And I think that, to me, those are the top 16s. But best value bets, I think, North Carolina and Kansas.
And North Carolina is a team that I hopped on. I think they were 33-1 when I grabbed them. And that was before they played Duke. And this is a very important talking point here because you just mentioned Kansas and the fact that they played Texas Tech here this weekend. Texas Tech is kind of in a bad way right now with Keenan Evans and that toe injury. They did not look good last night. Again, that's a game that's a team that we touched on a little bit for that Friday show, but they didn't look good. And he means a lot to that team offensively and defensively. He's far and away the leading scorer, also one of their best defensive players. So for Kansas here, if you're looking at them and you can see them out there, I think Five Dimes is 15-1. BetOnline is 18-1. One of the things that really helped me with North Carolina and the reason why I got such a good price on them is that I took them prior to the Duke game. I figured, okay, North Carolina's at home. The number's moving in their direction. They've got a good chance to win this game. If they beat Duke, this number is not 33-1 anymore. So I think it was actually 35-1 at one shot, but I didn't have an out there. So, you know, I hopped on them at 33-1. Now they're down to 20-1, 18-1, something like that. Kansas is in a similar situation here this weekend, where if they beat Texas Tech on the road, that 18-1 is long gone. Now, if they lose that game to Texas Tech, I don't know how much it adjusts their futures price, but with the way that Keenan Evans looks right now, I have to think Kansas is in good position to take that. So it may be in your best interest to hop on that 18-1 with the expectation that that price is gone if Kansas picks up this win.
No question. And that goes 18-1 probably to 10-1 just after one game. And keep in mind at that point, Kansas would pretty much, because now they're up a game on Texas Tech with the Red Raiders losing last night in Stillwater. Then that pretty much put them two games up and really wrapped up first team ever to win 14 straight conference championships as far as the regular season goes. No question about it. I used a similar method earlier this season, Virginia-Duke game. Virginia at the time was 25-1 at Westgate. It was right before the Duke game. I said, man, 25-1. I mean, this already is a top four team. Boy, if they go into Cameron and beat Duke, then they're going to – that 25-1, that'll be cut in half just after one game. And yeah, I used a very similar philosophy myself earlier in the season.
And the big thing here is, you know, a lot of people may be saying, well, if you think that they're going to make a deep run, what's the difference between 10-1 or 18-1? It's a huge difference. I mean, if you've got 100 to win 1800 instead of 100 to win 1000, that is $800 of extra hedging margin that you get with Kansas, to the point where, you know, you can probably take a look at hedging an 18-1, depending on your risk profile, of course, when you get to the Elite Eight. If you've got 10-1, hedging in the Elite Eight is very challenging to do. You'd probably be better off waiting for the Final Four at that point. Again, it's all about your risk management, your risk tolerance, your bankroll, things of that sort. But 18-1 opens up significantly more possibilities than 10-1, and that's why things like this matter.
And that's why shopping around matters, because, I mean, if you really look at, and maybe I know a lot of your listeners can't get here in Vegas, but a lot of the public shops, I mean, might be dealing – Kansas, you know, one shop might be dealing them 22-1, the next shop 15-1, and, you know, 12-1, 10-1, and that's why it's very important to shop around. I already mentioned at the top of the show, you know, you're looking at Arizona. Most places had it 100-1. I just happened to shop around and found 150-1. It was pretty much the only place in Vegas that had them 150-1, but, I mean, that's a significant value. I mean, with my $50 bet, you're talking – thousands of dollars difference between 100-1 and 150-1.
Yeah, and that's the important thing, you know, because like we said, you want to guarantee profit, and the higher profit potential you have on your initial investment, the more profit that you should be able to obtain, you know, by hedging and by doing those very smart things to your investments. So a really good talk here about futures on today's show. And speaking of that Kansas-Texas Tech game, a couple more items of business here. We'll talk about this one, then get a best bet or two from Brad for tonight or maybe over this weekend. But, you know, I know you got some very interesting statistics here, some good numbers on that Kansas versus Texas Tech matchup for Saturday.
Yeah, I already mentioned Kansas has the opportunity now to be the first team in college basketball history to win 14 straight conference championships. I think UCLA won 13 straight in the Wooden days. But, you know, if that, you know, 13, 14 is not good enough for you, how about 17? And, oh, that's what they are in revenge games in Big 12 play. They have never lost twice in the regular season to the same Big 12 team. Never have gone 0-2 in Bill Self's entire tenure there. And now it's going on, what, 15 years there? He's been in Lawrence, 17-0 in revenge games. Had a revenge game earlier this week against Oklahoma. That worked out pretty well for him after losing to the Sooners in the first game. They drilled him by 30 in the next game. Texas Tech, you know, pretty much just outplayed Kansas. Kansas had a lackadaisical effort in the first game, got out-rebounded significantly, sloppy with the basketball, had a bunch of turnovers. Kansas, you know, is going to be an underdog here. Now, I was hoping to be catching 4 or 5, boy, with Keenan Evans struggling and Texas Tech off back-to-back losses. I'm not sure how many points I'm going to be catching, maybe 1 or 2 now at this point. And, yeah, while I was looking to really jump in on that Kansas 17-0 streak, oh, man, I think the value spot's going to be a little bit gone, in my opinion, because Kansas, keep in mind, misleading win against West Virginia. They should not, I mean, they're down 8 or 9 points under 4 minutes left and win the game by 8 or 9. So that was misleading. And they're off probably their best shooting performance of the entire season. I mean, they hit 16 triples against Oklahoma as Matador defense. So value's not going to be there, but Kansas, in my opinion, is probably going to be a short dog. And what the hell, we'll go ahead and pick them to win that game outright.
All right, any other best bets that you want to pass along for our listeners here today?
Yeah, let's talk about something a little bit more actionable. Let's talk tonight. And I think I got a couple of Pac-12 games. I'm going to take a couple of home favorites. First game, Utah. You look at them -2, 2.5 now in the marketplace. Game number 6-1-0, tips off at 9 p.m. Eastern. I like what I've seen from Utah last 4 games. From them, the only non-cover being about a half a point on the road against Washington State. UCLA is coming off, in my opinion, a misleading win against Oregon. They really benefited from that game going to overtime. And the markets were against UCLA in that particular game. So they're off a win and cover there. I think Utah and a lot of the Pac-12 teams, much the home-away dichotomies in the Pac-12, probably greater than any other conference, at least in college basketball this year. UCLA struggled on the road. Utah's been really good in the altitude. Give me the Utes minus the 2, 2.5 there. And then the other one, it looks like, the marketplace is starting to jump on it. You look at the late game tonight, Oregon hosting Arizona State. Now, it did pop up to 4 since we've been doing the show. It came back down to 3, but I like the Ducks in that one. Game number 6-3-2, Oregon minus the 3 against, I think, an overrated Arizona State team since the turn of the calendar year, 3-9-1 against the number. Arizona State benefiting from the fact that they're coming off 3 straight home games, but, man, on the road, they've been relatively mediocre. Meanwhile, you look at Oregon, back-to-back losses on the road. I think this is a good spot to play on them at home where they won 4 straight. And they've been pretty good at home overall. Got the better defense here. Give me the Ducks minus the 3.
Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. What's going on over there right now at the website, man?
Yeah, at the website right now, BradPowersSports.com, we're talking each and every week the newsletter. And keep in mind, I talk to Arizona tickets. And the newsletter is mainly more of a football newsletter. Gets emailed to you each and every month during the off season, weekly during the season, most accurate football newsletter, 55% on all NFL and college picks the last 3 years. And we're talking a 500-plus game sample size there. You can make money hitting 55% with that kind of sample size. It's $69 for the year. And then we're running a March Madness special as far as VIP service where you get daily updates, best bets, you name it, all in college hardwood and the NBA. That'll be $99 in the month of March. Make sure you're checking that out at BradPowersSports.com.
Then you can follow Brad on Twitter at BradPowers and the number 7. Brad, appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
Right back at you. Take care.
Great stuff there on today's show from Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. And again on Twitter, that is at BradPowers and the number 7. One more guest coming your way here on this Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio as we welcome back Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Rolf, how's it going today, man?
Going great. You miss a week of the show, and it seems like it's been a month, so glad to be back.
It really does. It absolutely does. And I can tell you right now, you're very smart for moving out of the Northeast Ohio area, because if you were still here dealing with this weather, it'd feel like about 2 months.
Well, you know, my son called me yesterday or 2 days ago, and he said it's warmer in Cleveland than it is in Vegas. So I usually get that call 3 days out of the year, and that's about it, and I can handle those 3 days.
Yeah, it was 70 degrees on Tuesday, and then last night as I'm driving home from doing the recording, it's sleeting outside. So, you know, just a typical Cleveland winter, I guess I would say. All right, we got plenty of things to talk about here. We got some stuff to catch up on, actually, because last week in the Monday mailbag segment, I had a question from one of our listeners at 10Jet67, sort of wondering how my guests got their start in the industry. And I know you worked with Brad at North Coast Sports, worked for Phil Steele Publications, worked on the magazine. But what was it, Rolf, that made you want to transition into being a full-time multi-sport handicapper?
Well, I can thank our mutual friend, Brian Leonard. You know, I was betting sports when I was young, even in junior high school. And I was one of those kids pushing the football tickets in junior high to my friends. But really, when I moved out to California for a few years and started gambling and going to Vegas a little more often, at that point, offshore books weren't around. But when I moved back to Cleveland, Brian Leonard already had started the Round Ball Report, a NBA newsletter that he did weekly. And Brian actually went to high school with Phil Steele. So Phil was having his football service, and he wanted people to handicap other sports to sell on his community line. I had just moved back from California, so hence the name California Sports. Got into the community line, handicapping college basketball and the NBA. Added football to the repertoire a year later, and then after a few years, Phil and I got together and went to work for Phil, keeping California Sports on the side, and at that point just handicapping basketball while I worked for North Coast. So I can thank Brian Leonard for getting me into the business, and he's been a good friend for that many years.
And I know that something that you touched on a few weeks ago, and it's something that's really stood out to me, you know, in terms of the earlier start times out there in Las Vegas for a lot of these games. You mentioned that you're able to watch, you know, games like the Mountain West, games like the Big West and the Pac-12, you know, stuff that's a little bit harder to do when you're living in the Northeast Ohio area. So I imagine you have absolutely no regrets about relocating and getting the Cal Sports thing back going.
You know, it's been the perfect scenario for me being out in Vegas. I was always an early bird, so for me to watch games that tipped off 10 o'clock Eastern on the West Coast for both football and college basketball, how much can you really take and learn from those games, you know, either falling asleep during those games? So being out here watching games tipping off at 4 o'clock during the week, 9 a.m. on weekends is just the perfect scenario, and getting to watch all the late games has clearly helped my handicapping, you know, from those West Coast teams.
Yeah, I know I've had some listeners reach out and tell me that you've been having a fantastic season for them. And, of course, I've been following your progress as well. So, you know, kudos to you for that. And hopefully things only get stronger here as we head toward the madness of March. And before we do that, we've got some regular season betting angles to consider here, because you've got a lot of teams now that have, you know, two, maybe three regular season games left, some of them playing that second-to-last game here this evening. And, you know, as you approach the end of a regular season, and, you know, of course, we see this all the time now in college athletics with coaches, you know, sort of bumping up to bigger jobs, kind of getting that promotion, going from a low major to a mid-major or a mid-major to a, you know, Power 5 type of conference. Head coaching, a pretty big thing to look at here at this time of the season. And I know that one thing that you're kind of looking at are those teams that have already fired their head coaches this year.
You know, there's no scenario that always fits the mold, and you just have to look how things occur. You know, you saw the situation occur in Mississippi when Andy Kennedy resigned. He was planning to stay on this entire season. Well, he had a quote that Brad actually had put out, that a good friend, Dave Malinsky, had put in his Point Blank article, that Andy Kelly just felt he had lost his team and could not control his team. They had two blowout losses after he left, and obviously they had failed to cover both games. So what did he do? He actually resigned, stepped down, an interim stepped in, And what happened? Well, the interim called out his team. He actually called out their manhood and how embarrassed he was to be part of this team. And what did they do against Missouri? Well, after failing to win against Mississippi State by 17 points, go to Missouri as a dog, win that game in overtime. So two different situations just in that Ole Miss game. A coach that admitted he lost his team and the team lost both games, and then a coach that calls him out, an interim coach, and they win on the road. You know, a different situation is a coach that is just leaving because it was time to go, and that's Marty Wilson at Pepperdine. He's been there 7 years. Pepperdine, a very, very small school, tough to recruit, 4 wins this year. But he stepped down just before the BYU game, and he is just a beloved head coach. Pepperdine is a team that had 4 wins on the year. They were 4-20. What do they do at BYU? They're up at the half. They go to overtime. They lose in overtime. Last week against Gonzaga, last Saturday against Gonzaga, they only lose by 14 in cover. They have St. Mary's on Thursday, and then their final home game on Portland. We'll talk about that in a minute. So when you have these coaches that are leaving, you just want to read and try to understand the insides of the team. Colorado State's another team. You know, you have Larry Eustace, who's on paid leave. Then Steve Barnes is named the interim. He suspended. And now you have Jace Hess, who last night said a lot of coaches, there's coach speak. When you're reading coach speak, be very careful. He said, oh, the team showed a lot. I'm very happy the way they're progressing. Well, what happened to them last night? They got their doors blown off against Boise State. Why? Well, these kids know something's going on at Colorado State. You don't put your coach on paid leave. You don't get rid of an interim, and you don't have a second interim in a matter of a week and know not something's going on. Colorado State's a team that I'll look to continue to fade again because players are smart. They know things are happening at their program. Those kids are probably thinking, okay, where am I going to? Where am I going to transfer to? So different situations when coaches leave, you just try to play out the scenario with what the kids are thinking in that role.
Yeah, and you've got a situation here with Colorado State. They play on Sunday at Nevada, and that's clearly not a good spot for them. I mean, the Wolfpack, you know, trying to make sure that they smooth out all their rough edges before going to the Mountain West Conference Tournament, and then they'll be in March Madness, irrespective of if they win this conference tournament or not. Then New Mexico in that last game, it'll be senior day, but, you know, kind of a melancholy type of atmosphere because this is a Colorado State team, and I've seen this on Twitter a couple of times. With Eustace being suspended, you know, this is a team that didn't even want to practice. The players boycotted practice as their way of showing solidarity for their coach. So that kind of gives you some sort of idea on, you know, how invested they are in playing out the string.
And, you know, you see it. They're now 1-9 their last 10 games. And the win is against the worst team in the conference by far, San Jose State. They won that game by 11. But the JV team could beat San Jose State by at least 7. So that's not saying much. So, again, you've got the situations playing out. You've got a disgruntled team. And they're probably just happy the season's going to be over.
Now, this is a topic that we talked about on tomorrow's recording, and you know, I think this is a very interesting thing to discuss here at this time of the year, and we'll do it a lot more next week because it'll be a little bit more time relevant at that point. But in Conference USA, so for those that don't know, only 12 of the 14 teams in Conference USA make it into the conference tournament. So for the two teams that finish at the bottom of the league, when the regular season is over, their seasons are finished. And of the three bottom feeders in Conference USA, you have 11 teams that are pretty much in, FAU and Florida International making the cut line there at 5-9. But you've got UTEP at 3-11, Rice at 2-12, Charlotte at 1-13. UTEP and Charlotte, both teams that have had that have seen their coaches go this year. Tim Floyd at UTEP, Mark Price at Charlotte. So those are two interesting situations as well where, you know, Charlotte probably won't do it. I mean, they're two games behind UTEP, so I don't even think that they can mathematically get in. But a UTEP team here going up against a Rice team for that last spot in the conference tournament, how invested is UTEP to actually keep playing, you know, additional games?
Well, you know, Rice actually gets to host UTEP on Thursday, March the 1st. So that really will be the game that be that all deciding game. And unfortunately for UTEP, it is on the road. You know, the thing about UTEP is, you know, they started the season 5-7 in their non-conference schedule. So they had a decent non-conference schedule. You know, and then you had the Tim Floyd situation. So that was a little smoother than the Charlotte. You know, the interim had been there. He had been with Floyd for a while. Charlotte's situation's a little different. But I can agree with you that it's much tougher for a UTEP team with an interim head coach where, you know, Scott Pera for Rice is a first-year head coach. Granted, they're only 5-22. Granted, they only have – granted, they're only 2-12 in the Big 10 – excuse me, 2-12 in the Big 12. But when you have a first-year head coach, you have your young recruits looking for playing time next year. Rice isn't a powerhouse. One bad season is expected of a new head coach as he makes progressions and changes his offensive and defensive schemes. So you are correct that I agree with the philosophy that playing for a first-year head coach, much easier to do because you know you're playing for him next year than you are for an interim.
All right, a few more interesting regular season angles that we're going to touch on here on today's show, and this is one that I think is very, very intriguing. You know, you've got a lot of these revenge games here where teams are playing for the second time in a regular season. I know that you've got some thoughts on that.
Well, you know, it's revenge is a word that I don't like using a lot because just because you lost doesn't mean you have revenge. You know, revenge to me is you are revenging a situation where you were expected to win. You went in that game expecting to win, and you're very disappointed you lost. So just because someone's meeting for the second time and they lost the first time, well, if they were an underdog, to me, they were expected to lose. That is not revenge. I look at revenge when it was your first conference loss as a favorite. If it was your lone home loss as a conference foe, you know, or you're a favorite of, I usually use a touchdown or more. Even small home favorites, you know, you're not coming into that game, oh, we expected to win. Other situations I look at is, if the game was close to a pick 'em, and let's say you blew a big lead, you blew a 10-point lead in the last minute and a half, or you have a reason to remember that game, you had an outlier performance with your worst shooting performance, or you allowed 68%. So in the second meetings, I give extra emphasis for those cases. You had an outlier poor performance, the other team had an outlier great performance, or you were a sizable favorite and lost the game, or a situation where you lost because of an extraordinary comeback. In those four cases, I'll start looking to play in that second meeting. If not, I just handicap it like any extra game. The word revenge is never used in that situation. So same season, be careful in those second games, and don't automatically assume that because they're meeting the second time, the team that lost the first time has an advantage. Sometimes the team that lost the first time, the other team is just better than you.
Yeah, and that's a really excellent point to make because you're going to hear in the conference tournament portion of the season, you know, oh, it's so hard to beat a team three times in a season. And maybe that's true. Maybe that is the case if you've got two teams that are on fairly equal footing. But a lot of times you just have one team that's better than the other, and they should win all three games. So, you know, how much emphasis do you put in the box score of that first game? I mean, is there too much variance in a one-game sample size, or can you sometimes, you know, pick out things where if there's a big rebounding edge, that's just going to be the case in the second game, it's just the way it is, or, you know, if a team turns the ball over a lot more, that's just the way it's going to be. Do you feel like you can gain some things from that, or do you try to tread lightly because it is just a one-game sample size?
Well, you know, there's so many games in college basketball, and I can't follow them all, you know, every day. I actually, when they're having a second meeting, I like going back and reading the recap of the first team. And what I always do is I always go to the school site, and I always read what the school wrote about it, because then you can really get the feel of, was that team disappointed, when you can read the notes or the quotes in their write-up. So, you know, it's a situation where I do look at the shooting percentages from 2 and 3 points if there's an outlier in that. You know, the rebounding a lot of times can be directly correlated with the shooting. If you had a poor shooting night, you're probably going to get more rebounds because you missed more shots, and likewise. So I don't look at the rebounding as much unless it's a crazy performance. But I do like always reading the schools take on the paper at the school website to see their thoughts of what happened in the game.
All right, so as I mentioned, we've got two or three games left for most of these teams. We've already seen some senior nights already. Michigan State had theirs already, for example. What does senior night mean to you from a handicapping standpoint?
Well, it's probably going to be the alternative of what most people think. When teams are doing poorly, I look to play on them senior night. When teams are doing well, I look to fade them. You know, one example is I was on Minnesota last night. Minnesota had lost 9 straight games. We know they were without their top 2 players for most of January and February. But it was a situation where you have a quality team that was in the tournament last year. You have a quality head coach who's not going anywhere. You know he's going to be there next year. They're highly recruited for the upcoming season, and they're ending their season. Their previous home game was a 30-point loss to Michigan State. On the flip side, you're only laying a point or a point and a half, and you're playing an Iowa team that was 1-9 straight up on the road. Their only road win back the beginning of January at Illinois in overtime. So you had a let's make a stand type of game for Minnesota, and I was on them. Other times, I look when teams are doing well, they're on a win streak. There's a lot of pressure with senior night. You have the pageantry of walking out your seniors. If your top 2 leading scorers are seniors, a lot of times I look to fade them. Again, if they're on a winning streak, added pressure, the extra pageantry, the sadness of knowing this is your final home game on this court, all of that adds up to fading the better team as a favorite. So, again, 2 different situations, and you can't always fit the bill, but I really do like playing on those teams that are on a losing streak with those situations that I said. Quality team has proven they could win. Quality head coach that we know is going to be there next year, and let's make a stand and send out our seniors on a winning note.
And something that I think is interesting, and I tried to do this when Oakland was playing Cleveland State because I saw somebody – retweeted into my timeline of Cleveland State honoring their seniors, and it didn't work out because I tried to just play the first half. Oakland wound up covering the full game. But one of the things that you can look to do from a derivative standpoint is, you know, sometimes these teams on senior night will start all of the seniors. And what happens in that situation is you have some seniors that play 3, 4, 5 minutes a game. They're, you know, the 10th or 11th or 12th guy on the bench, but they're getting to start because, you know, they've been there at practices, they've contributed to the team, they've been good teammates or team leaders or whatever the case may be. Excuse me. So the coaches are going to put them out there on the floor. And sometimes that's at the expense of one of their better players. So if you follow some of these teams on social media, you can find some of these instances where, you know, that starting five of seniors may be a pretty significant downgrade over the first 10, 15, 20 possessions of that game. You may find some good first half betting angles as a result.
Oh, I would completely agree with that thought, especially when you have quality teams. Any team that's in the AP Top 40 is not going to have 5 seniors that are worth playing. They're probably gone already. A lot of those guys are 1-and-done guys or you know, 2-and-done guys. So when you have your better teams doing that, you certainly can get that situation. I know teams that most coaches, if you're going for a conference title, you're not going to do that. You know, you're going to pull your seniors early. You're going to give them some time. But great angle, Adam. And it's one that I've heard of, I looked at. I've never really monitored or followed. But now that you bring it up again, it's something I'll look into a little bit more. And if I find anything, we'll share it on the next show.
And I certainly encourage our listeners. You know, we talk about this all the time. And maybe it's still not too late in the season to be doing this. But you know, use social media to your advantage. Find those beat writers, follow the team accounts, have some lists. You know, it's a time-consuming process, but one of the things I talked about, you know, earlier on in the week here is that one of the most important things for anybody that wants to take this seriously, and Rolf, I know you know this as well as anybody, being organized is huge. Organization is such a great skill when you're a handicapper to know where you want to look for news, to know where you can get news, to, of course, have your action tracked so that you know where you're doing well, areas where you're not maybe doing so well. But use social media to your advantage. Follow the teams, follow the beat writers. Maybe you can get some of these instances where you'll see, you know, oh, an all senior lineup starting tonight. You go and look at the stats for those teams. Maybe 2 or 3 of those guys play 8 to 10 minutes a game, and they're very low efficiency shooters. Those are all betting angles you can look to take advantage of.
You know, two quick notes on that. The first is, I mean, just if anyone's brand new to the industry, I mean, a site like USSportsPages.com is a site that has four regions. You go to each region, and it has the top 60 papers from that region. It just gives you a place to start if you want to look. You know, and second is absolutely. I mean, the schools' game notes each day, they're usually put out the day before, might not share injuries with you, but it is just a plethora of information that, you know, you may think you can only get information from beat writers or newspapers. The school itself puts out a lot of great information, so check those game notes out. Just Google the school site, go to their basketball page, the news, and you'll find their game notes daily. I mean, I don't give out a game without checking those game notes.
All right, a couple of other points we want to make here with regards to the end of the regular season and also the upcoming conference tournaments. This sounds like it may be kind of obvious, but it is something that listeners absolutely do need to pay attention to. And if you use a site, you know, like KenPom, well, this is something that's not necessarily taken into account for you. So, you know, I know that you've got a very important tip here on looking at stats when you're handicapping.
Well, you know, it's people look at records, both people look at records, people look at conference records. But, you know, one thing I look at is I look at conference offense and defense efficiency, and I look at conference points per game. So many times people look and they find a record of a team and they think, oh, this team is bad. But in fact, they have a better conference record. So just ensure yourself that, you know, when you're looking at comparing two teams that have an equal record or close that are close in the standings, look how they've done. This is now the time in college basketball where you should be throwing out all non-conference information. That's irrelevant at this point. We've only got a handful of games left. Everyone has basically played the exact same strength of schedule within their conference. Obviously, if you're the worst couple teams, you're going to have played a tougher conference schedule because you're playing the better teams and vice versa. But by comparing plus and minus rebounding stats, plus and minus point per game stats for conference only, I think it's vital to look at those things. In fact, that's all I look at. I look at conference records. I look at plus and minus rebounds and plus and minus rebounding and points, and look at current form. You know, while I always say look at records, records can also be deceiving as well. You know, last night example, let me give you a game, George Washington and Richmond. Richmond came in 9-17, George Washington 12-15, but the conference games were within one, the conference record. You know, the difference is, Richmond actually had a better conference record despite their 9-17 record than George Washington. But when I looked at how those teams have been finishing, Richmond started the Atlantic 10 season 6-3, and they had lost their last three games while allowing their last four opponents to shoot 58, 51, 50, and 51%. George Washington started the conference 2-9, and they won three of their last four games. They've held their opponents to 37, 39, 40, and 38%. So this is a case where I say look at the conference record, but I actually played against that because of current form. Three straight losses, a team that won 3-1, a team allowing 51% compared to a team allowing 39%. George Washington wins that game by 30 points. So, again, when we say things to look at, there's always outliers, and the most important thing, no matter what you're looking at, is what a team has done the most recent in their most recent few games to see what you're going to get out of them tonight.
And then one other consideration here for late in the regular season, and we'll look at a couple of best bets for you for Thursday and Saturday, bubble teams. You know, everyone knows who's on the bubble. Everyone is so interested in following the bracketology. Everyone fills out a bracket. It doesn't matter if it's that, you know, female coworker that knows absolutely nothing about basketball, she's filling out a bracket. If you're 8 years old, you're filling out a bracket. Doesn't really matter. Everyone just wants to have something to follow along with here in March Madness. So everyone knows who's on the bubble. Everyone's trying to figure out, you know, who's going to wind up being in the field of 68. So you can certainly look to take advantage of some of those bubble situations on a game-by-game basis.
Oh, I absolutely look to take advantage of them, and I look to take advantage of them by fading those that are sizable favorites. When teams are starting to play with pressure, teams tighten up. When you're playing a bubble, kids read newspapers. Kids may not read newspapers. Let me correct that. Kids read social media. Social media will then let them know they're a bubble team. And there's so many different bubble teams that even though a team may not be a bubble team, they may think they're a bubble team. Anyone in that, you know, anyone in that 30 to 50 range at one point is gonna come out as a bubble team. So I clearly look to fade them. These are young kids. The season is a grind enough as it is. When you have a bubble team that is on the road, I automatically look to fade them. When you have a bubble team that's a sizable favorite, all that coach and all that kid cares about is winning that game. The margins are relevant to them. Then they're looking forward to the next game. When you're a bubble team, you got to remember, it's not let's win one and, oh, yes, let's celebrate because we're there. When you're a bubble team, that means you're going to have to probably win three of four, at least two of three. You're going to have to win down the stretch. So a win that night doesn't necessarily mean you achieved your goal. A win that night just means you get to play another game with added pressure because you achieved the first goal. So the bubble teams continue to get pressure as the season winds down to the last few games.
And I think there's one game from last night that's a really good example of this game, 7-23, 7-24 with Duquesne and St. Bonaventure. Bonaventure is now a bubble team, and some projections actually do have them in. I know Lenardi has them as one of his last four in. They would be in one of those play-in games with the 11 seeds. But, you know, now this is a team all of a sudden with that win over Rhode Island. You know, they kind of put themselves into that discussion to the point where they don't necessarily have to win the A-10. What happens? Well, last night they're a 13-point favorite against Duquesne. That number gets bet down to 10, and they never came close to covering the number. It was a tie game at half. Bonaventure won 73-67, but that's one of those examples where you have a team that picks up a high-profile win against Rhode Island, puts themselves in the bubble discussion. Some projections put them in the tournament, and then all of a sudden, as you mentioned, the pressure mounts. The pressure adds up, you know, and it's not really a win-and-get-out type of scenario. It's, hey, we need to put style points on this thing too, and then you get a spot with an inflated line. They win the game, but they put no style points on it. And look, let's be honest here. I mean, for Bonaventure, you know, I mean, they're a very good team. They won 21 games, 9 in a row. You have to give them credit. But for a lot of these bubble teams, especially the ones in the power conferences, the Kansas States, the Baylors, the Syracuse, the Louisvilles, the Texases, you know, the Washingtons, the Penn States, these teams are on the bubble because ultimately they're not all that good. And playing with extra pressure and inflated lines, that's a problem.
Yeah, and, you know, you look at Bonaventure, and you look at their run, four of their last five games have also been at home. They won at LaSalle. So you're going to have them at VCU Saturday, at St. Louis, March the 3rd. You know, could be senior nights, could not be, but you're going to have them as a significant road favorite. And then that Davidson game in between at home, boy, they're going to be a small home favorite against a very good Davidson team. So, I completely agree. You know, the one thing about St. Bonaventure that is a little different is, I mean, when you have a player like Jalen Adams on your team, it's a lot easier to have a point guard that is a superstar as far as that conference goes. But again, their goal is just to win the game. Margin doesn't matter. And those are the two situations you want to perhaps look to fade: VCU Saturday and St. Louis the following night. Playing on the road is tough.
It is. And I think another spot, you look at a team like Providence, for example, Providence could probably remove all doubt if they go on the road to Cincinnati and beat Xavier. But at Georgetown here this weekend with a quicker turnaround because the wet floor suspended their game against Seton Hall last night, their final regular season game against St. John's, they'll be laying a very healthy number in that one. And you know, those expectations, those inflated prices, things that you do want to look to go against, I do think there's some value, you know, in terms of fading the bubble, so to speak. Maybe there are some bubble teams that do take this and run with it. Maybe Bonaventure winds up being that team. But, you know, again, you're going to see that in the betting market. You're going to see that perception change. And those are things that you always want to look to try and take advantage of. So Rolf, as we wrap up this segment here, and good to get you back on the program this week, a couple of best bets from you. What are you looking at here for Thursday night?
You know what? Tonight we're going to look at game 603, Georgia State. And while not a prime game, you know, it's a game I think certainly fits the mold as a great play. You're looking at Georgia State, and we know Georgia State has been a tournament team under their head coach, Ron Hunter. So now you have a team that's 19-8. Well, just last week they were 19-6. What happened? They beat Louisiana Lafayette, the best team in the Sun Belt by far. They pulled the home upset. Then they lose to ULM in overtime. That could be expected because of the letdown. And now they lose to Georgia Southern on the road. So you're sitting at 19 wins, and now you have a team you certainly can take out your frustrations on with Texas State. You know, you look at the conference efficiency. Georgia State's top five in both offense and defense in the Sun Belt, while Texas State's 12 on offense. They do not have the offense to keep up with Georgia State. So tonight, game 603, Georgia State minus the 3.5 against Texas State.
And Texas State has dropped 6 in a row as well. They started 7-2 in conference play. Now they're down to 7-8. And one other angle here that you didn't touch on, but I know that this is something that you're looking at, certainly here for the regular season, for those teams that maybe won't make the conference tournament or those that get to the conference tournament, those round numbers mean something. Georgia State wants that 20th win. Teams want to finish 500. I know that's an angle that you've had a lot of success with in the past here at this time of the year.
Yeah, you know, it hasn't worked as well the last few years. Not only do teams want to get to 20, if a team is hitting 20 for the first time, I look to play against them as well, because it's a celebratory point, as you bring up. Now, there are some teams that reach 20 every year, and that's irrelevant. If a team has made the progression, hasn't hit 20 the last few years, reaches that 20 win mark, again, it's a situation I look to play against in their immediate next game. I do have one more bonus tonight, Adam. You know, we don't talk NBA on the show, and I don't do much NBA, but I would like to chime in just with an NBA best bet tonight as well. And it's just because I'm born and raised in Cleveland, follow the Cavs. You know, I think there's great value on the Cavs since the trade. They made their trade. They've won and covered 4 straight. They played Atlanta the first day they made the trade with a bunch of G League guys and won and covered that. But the two games that they've had, there are 4 new players. They go to Boston and they go to OKC. They win and cover both. They shoot over 50% in both games. They hold their foes to under 41.5%. And I think you have the mindset of LeBron James, where he is now the teacher again. It's not, let's share the ball with Isaiah Thomas and Derrick Rose and D. Wade, and I've got to get these guys involved. It's now, this is my team. I have a bunch of young, hungry kids who want to learn from me. Let me be the teacher. This is LeBron tutoring Kyrie back a few years ago when they were good. So I think you have them at home. You're getting value because they've been one of the worst home favorites in the history of the NBA up until the trade. You're only laying 5. You're currently the 3 seed. Washington only 1.5 games behind you. There's some history there where LeBron wants to beat Washington for some statements they used to say. And again, if you have the Cavs and you have LeBron hungry and healthy at home, rested off a great All-Star game, only laying 5 to anybody, I think there's great value in that tonight as well.
I like the Cavs tonight, too. I actually wrote up a how-to-bet piece on that game here this morning over at bangthebook.com, so you can get some more of my thoughts in that one. But the biggest takeaway for me in watching some of the games after the trades, LeBron's smiling, LeBron's having fun, the bench is having fun. Like, a complete weight has been lifted off of the shoulders of this team. And if they're going to have fun playing basketball again with the best player on the planet, they're a very dangerous team the rest of the way, and I certainly think that mold holds true. All right, how about for Saturday? What are you looking at in college basketball for Saturday?
Well, I mentioned it earlier, and it's Pepperdine. Pepperdine with their 4 wins. You know, their coach was let go before the BYU game. He's finishing the season. They take BYU to overtime. They cover against Gonzaga. They play St. Mary's tonight, so I'm not worried about St. Mary's if they cover the game or don't cover tonight. But then they're at home against Portland. The game's going to be pick 1 or 2. And, you know, you have Portland that is a horrible road team. You know, one thing we didn't touch on is do not play on a bad road team if the game is close to pick 'em. There's some situations coming up this weekend. Cal Poly's 1-11 there at Riverside. Washington State 0-9 on the road tonight. They're close against Cal. Little Rock's 1-13 on the road. They're going to be close to a pick 'em at ULM. If you have a bad road team that has 0 or 1 wins on the year, do not play them on the road. It doesn't matter who's winning. Plus, you have a Pepperdine team with a beloved head coach playing their final home game in a situation where they're only going to have to win the game, maybe lay a basket to cover. I like Pepperdine on Saturday against Portland.
I really like that angle all around. Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. What do you got going on over there at WagerTalk?
You know what? As you said, it's been a great college basketball season. I'll be doing a college basketball, if you want a cheat sheet for conference-only rebounds and points, I'll have that up tomorrow at WagerTalk. Just go to news. Those that follow the NBA stat sheet, the NBA seems like they've been off a month. They're back tonight. The NBA sheet's up there with a free best bet as well.
And you can follow Rolf on Twitter at CalSportsLV. Rolf Michaels, WagerTalk.com. Appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us this week, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, guys.
Great stuff there today from Rolf Michaels of WagerTalk.com. Good to get him back on the program. So as I teased a couple times here during the show, we'll have one of those studio quality recordings on Friday with Kyle Hunter of HunterSportsPicks.com. So no live show, and I'll post it as early as I can in the morning to give you some extra lead time with that. I do have a couple of spots where I screwed up on the show, and since we recorded it last night, I do want to point those out. I had the wrong Walker. It was Tavon Walker of Valpo, not Martez Walker at Oakland, who had mono earlier in the year. So I do want to issue a quick correction with that. Then also I had the wrong coach for Arkansas State. John Brady is not the head coach anymore. He was the head coach a few years ago. You can blame ESPN's Arkansas State page for that one, but I did just want to throw those out here since I won't be able to correct them live on the show tomorrow, and I really hate making mistakes. So, you know, maybe infallibility is not exactly my strong suit, but I just wanted to correct those here on today's program. But we will have that studio quality recording with Kyle Hunter from HunterSportsPicks.com as our Friday show, and then we'll hear from him again on Monday. Also, don't forget about the Monday mailbag segment coming up here. Shoot me your questions on Twitter at Skating Tripods. Happy to answer anything, you know, not about politics or any of that type of stuff. But if you're curious about any pop culture opinions I have, alcohol opinions as well. So I know I had a question about bourbon last week on the show, but of course, most of you want to know about sports betting and about some of the angles that are out there. So I'm happy to talk about those on that Monday mailbag segment. So again, shoot me over those questions on Twitter at Skating Tripods. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. We'll have a show tomorrow, but I will talk to you again on Monday.